The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private. Trust Ireland's leading private hospitals with locations nationwide, including Dublin, Cork and Limerick.
This is News Talk.
Bob Woodward's new book, Rage, offers an intimate glimpse into the mind of the man in the Oval Office, President Donald Trump. Well, I spoke to him from the United States, the author of Rage, associate editor of The Washington Post. Bob Woodward, you're very welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, I've been following the American presidential election campaigns for quite some time. It does appear on the face of it that President Trump's campaign is unraveling. Do you agree?
Well, it would appear so. You can't tell because we have polls in this country that say that Biden has got double digits, 10% more lead. But the real issue is what's the level of commitment the Biden voters have and the Trump voters. And there's some evidence that the Trump voters have more commitment.
The issues that have come up in recent times, besides the ever-escalating numbers of people who've died from COVID-19, there was the reference to suckers and losers, members of the military, and a story throwing doubt on the killing of Osama bin Laden under the Obama administration. All of these things seem to us to be very strange that they would even get traction, but they may be having an effect.
Well, Trump has lots of strange ideas and attitudes. I spent this year over 9 hours interviewing him for this book. And let me, maybe it would be helpful if I try to distinguish what he thinks is going on in this country versus what really is going on. First of all, he thinks he's handled the pandemic very well because he said he banned early on flights from China to the United States. What happened, he did put on restrictions. It was not enough. He knew at the end of January, was warned, I outline in the book in detail, that this pandemic was coming, that it was going to be similar to the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic that killed 675,000 people. He did not organize the government. He wasn't honest about what the expectations would be. It's more than negligence, it's malfeasance. So he thinks he's done great. He has not. In terms of the American economy, he talks about the way the American economy was and how it's going to be, but not how it is. And right now, it's a disaster. Tens of millions of people out of work. He says in terms of race relations in this country, he's done more for black people than anyone other than President Abraham Lincoln. Turns out he has not done that much for black people, and that the whole Black Lives Matter movement has gone on without his support and his understanding.
You spent a lot of time talking to President Trump, 17 interviews in all, 16 of them actually on audio. Why do you now believe that Donald Trump allowed you to record them? Because there's echoes of the Nixon tapes there. And tape means there is no deniability.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he decided because my first book, Fear, that came out in 2018, he denounced as untrue. People told him it actually was all true. And so he agreed to do these interviews. I was able to prepare as issues developed, and he allowed me to push him in a way I think some of his staff, or maybe all of his staff, is not allowed to do that. So it was, for me as a reporter, an extraordinary opportunity to really get what his attitudes were and what he was trying to do in real time for this sitting president, I've interviewed other presidents, but never as often. And in this way, I kind of think of Trump as the night prowler around the White House. He does not drink. I think that's true. He's up after 10 o'clock at night, and he's looking for some action, for something to do. And he would call me, or he would call me on the weekends, or I had a number where I could contact him right away and get him on the phone because of the virus. I couldn't go to the White House, didn't want to go to the White House. So, you know, it was my experience. It's is close to a full portrait of a sitting president and what he was doing and how he was responding to matters. And he let me record them, and I insisted that they be on the record so I could publish them in the book or put out the audios of what he said.
Do you believe it was simple vanity? Because, I mean, you are an iconic journalist in the United States, beginning with Watergate and many intervening interludes of fame and celebrity. Do you think that that went a bit to his head?
I don't know. I mean, I think he did say many times, these are good questions. He likes the questions. And, you know, I can't analyze what he was thinking or what his motive was. All I can do is describe what happened. And let's take the average American out there in the country. What's important is what the policies were, what he was trying to do, what he cared about, and that I was able to capture, at least for me, as closely as I've been able to in reporting on any president, except maybe Nixon, because Nixon had hundreds of hours of his secret tape recordings. And, of course, those disclose the nature and the depth of the crimes that Nixon committed.
Now, the kind of people who are turning against him at the moment, and most recently a Nebraskan Senator Ben Sasse.
There are obviously a lot of places where he and I differ as well, and these aren't just mere policy issues. So the way he kisses dictators' butts, I mean, the way he ignores that the Uyghurs are in literal concentration camps in Xinjiang. The United States now regularly sells out our allies under his leadership. The way he treats women and spends like a drunken sailor, he mocks evangelicals behind closed doors. His family has treated the presidency like a business opportunity. He's flirted with white supremacists. I think we are staring down the barrel of a blue tsunami, and we've got to hold the Senate. And so that's what I'm focused on. I'm not focused on Donald Trump.
Do you believe that that is finally the Republican Party seeing the writing on the wall, that this could be the end of the Trump era, and they're trying to regain ground?
It's possible. It's hard to tell. One of the facts I report in some detail is that the Republicans who privately think he's, as I do, he's the wrong man for the job of being president, will not say so publicly. And so their silence, I think, is one of the realities here, and quite frankly, it reflects a sickness in American politics that people will not say what they really think because they are interested in political survival over, I think, a necessary. I think the government functions best when it's transparent and people say what they really believe, and not hide, as many Republican, particularly Republican senators, are hiding. I think it is, in history, it's going to be viewed as a sadness, but it goes beyond sadness. It is a catastrophe for a democracy to try to function on untruth rather than truth.
Now, you write that he has always operated as a real estate operator on instinct. You know, he doesn't necessarily have to know everything about something. He kind of gets a hunch and he acts on it. He seems to do the same with foreign affairs, with one difference. He seems to enjoy the company of people who've already got, if you like, international television celebrity, be it a Putin or be it a Kim Jong-un.
Well, I think it's not the celebrity. I think that what Trump is interested in, and you have to give him credit for one thing. We've not had a new war in the years he's been president. I was in the United States Navy back in the 1960s during Vietnam, and I know that war and how it was built on a series of untruths, and that is a war in which 58,000 Americans died. It's a negative mark in American history, in my view. I look at Trump. Look at he hasn't started a war or been involved in a war, to his credit, but 220,000 people have died because of the virus. That's almost four times the number that have died, that did die in Vietnam. Now, he's not responsible for all of that, but he's responsible for tens of thousands of lives, most likely, according to the experts. But he didn't make the effort, and the effort has to be in the book. If I may say this, my wife Elsa, her parents were from Ireland, County Cork. Do you know it?
Mm-hmm. Of course. And it's they regard it as the most important county in Ireland if you come from Cork.
I'm sure that's the case. And what happened, Elsa edited this book for me six times. She was totally involved in the process, involved in some of the interviews that I had with Trump. She was committed to the project to kind of describe him as completely as possible. And because we, for the last 10 months, lived in this kind of Trump world vacuum where he could call at any time of the night. He'd call at 10 o'clock or a little after 10 or on weekends. But we would sit at dinner and talk about Trump. I remember once she said, can we tonight spend 15 minutes on something other than Trump? And so she got her Trump relief, but it was not long. But she asked the question, well, what is the remedy? What should Trump have done? And she looked back in history and looked at Franklin Roosevelt's fireside chats in the 30s and during World War II. And it's very instructive, and I describe this in the book at the end, to go back and listen to those fireside chats. And after Pearl Harbor, President Roosevelt came out and said, all the news is bad. The very survival of our country is at stake. And I know you people in this country will rise to the occasion. And he knew the importance of telling the American people the truth. Trump did not. And one of the giant sadnesses in this is that Trump does not understand the country he leads. That if you tell the American people, it's like the people of Ireland, to the extent I know the history there, when you people are told the truth, you rise to the occasion. Americans do. But he did not understand that strength in the population. And if he had just, when he was warned at the end of January, come out and said, you know, a pandemic, a health catastrophe is coming. We have to prepare ourselves and organize. It would be very much a different story if he had just said there's simple things that people can do, like wash your hands, wear a mask, keep social distance of 6 feet at least, don't gather in a room for extended periods of time with people. If he just said that in February or at any point in all of this, but he's been in a state of denial about it all, and in being in a state of denial himself, has deprived the people in this country of the information and the organization and the power of the presidency to come forward and say, look, we're in for bad times. Let's work together. He did the exact opposite.
Now, Bob, I mentioned instinct, you know, that you say he has always operated on instinct, even if it's instinct in ignorance. But he seems to have lost his touch in recent days. I mean, attacking the sainted man that is Dr. Tony Fauci, for instance, calling him an idiot and much more.
People are tired of COVID. I have the biggest rallies I've ever had, and we have COVID. People are saying, whatever, just leave us alone. They're tired of it. People are tired of hearing Fauci and all these idiots, these people that have gotten it wrong. Fauci's a nice guy. He's been here for 500 years. He's a disaster. I mean, this guy's, if I listened to him, we'd have 500,000 deaths.
I mean, what is happening to Donald Trump? I mean, you can be smart and say, well, it's the steroids he's on, but that's, you know, probably not the truth.
Yeah, well, first of all, Dr. Fauci in this country is the leading infectious disease expert. And it's not quite 500 years he's done this, but it's, I think, 47 or 48 years. And he's the conscience of the medical community. He's not always been right. He's particularly on the virus, but he's somebody who speaks with knowledge and experience, and quite, I know him, he speaks from the heart and the head, both. And you're exactly right, for Trump to not just criticize, but to use this cruel language about Fauci, we are reaching a point, and you know this happens, where people do not know what their own self-interest is. I think Trump does not know what his self-interest is. And his self-interest would be to, as I say, to organize the country, but to increase the divisions and go out and attack Fauci, or to say, as he did recently, that when he, Trump, got the coronavirus, it was a gift from God. I mean, imagine that. This is a disease. This is it's 8 million people in this country had the virus. So tens of millions of people have somebody in their family or somebody in their circle who's had this awful disease. So, you know, what's going on here? I don't know. I can't diagnose it, but politically, who's going to sit around and say, gee, this is a good thing to get the virus, a blessing from God? Let's go back to Watergate 50 years ago with Nixon. Suppose Nixon had said, Watergate is a blessing from God. Republicans would have been lined up to get into the White House and to get him to stop talking like that or to get him out of office. And we see, again, this silence on the part of so many Republicans. And in the end, everyone has to deal with what they've done, good and bad. And this is not going to be a happy moment for people who have hid and been silent about what's going on.
Associate editor of the Washington Post, Bob Woodward, author of Rage, which can be bought from all Irish bookstores, and what a better time to support them than when we're somewhat locked in. Once again, Bob Woodward, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, sir.